No matter how well prepared each of us is individually in the work world, whether in management or whether we're working in a subordinate relationship or some other executive, we, all of us, are faced with the difficulties of stressors that are primarily oriented or originate in the job itself. There are several illustrative kinds of things that might be done, and I'd like to suggest, first of all, a group of these that I might call emergency measures or first aid for job stress. These are the kinds of things that you can do instantly, immediately, right now when you're feeling that anger, when you're feeling the bad moment. Do something right now, rather than trying to carry it with you. One suggestion is to install a punching bag in every department in the plant. We've seen a number of organizations that have done exactly that, or variations of it. They have put punching bags, heavyweight bags, light bags, padded walls, or inflatable Bozo the Clown dolls in every department. One advertising agency in New York has a big brass Chinese gong, and the idea is when you feel like hitting somebody, go hit something. Instead of it being another person, go hit Bozo. Now there's a couple of things that can happen if you think about this crazy image that I'm suggesting. When you feel like hitting and you go ahead and hit something, what you're doing is discharging that energy. Some people would say, Clay, you're teaching people to be aggressive. And my response to that is, no, I'm not teaching them to be aggressive. They are normally aggressive. That aggression is built into the system. It is why we prevailed in the survival history and other species did not. We are not jellyfish. We are people who like to take on situations. And when you feel like taking somebody on, displace that anger in a safe way. The second thing this does is create a kind of silly situation. Here you've been taking yourself so seriously. You're so wound up over this. Go over and punch this little clown in the nose. It's such a silly reversal. It's a complete flip-flop of what you've been feeling. One consequence of this silly behavior is that the silliness neutralizes the seriousness with which you've been taking yourself. My understanding is that during the Iranian hostage crisis, the Ayatollah Dartboard Company did extremely well. It's a silly, momentary, temporary thing to vent work frustration on an object rather than on another person, rather than keeping it all bottled up inside you. Another suggestion by way of a first aid nature, and none of these are designed to solve the problem, they're just designed to kind of help you live with it momentarily, is to breathe 10. There's an old surfing phrase, hang 10. This is a little different. Breathe 10. Some people tell you to count 10. I've never had any luck with that. The idea, I guess, in counting to 10 is that it puts a pause between the moment of feeling the anger and hoping it'll go away by the time you reach the end of the count. I've never found that it worked for me. But if you will breathe 10, what you're going to do is increase the oxygenation of the bloodstream, which tends to metabolize blood lactate, the substance created under stress that makes you feel anxious and uptight. It's an old actor's gimmick. It's a professional speaker's trick. The next time you have to give a talk, and by the way, more people in the United States are afraid of giving a talk than are afraid of dying, before you get up to speak, take 10 deep breaths. It has a temporary and an almost immediate calming influence. You might try doing that right now as you're listening to this program. Breathe 10. A couple of other advantages to breathing 10. Maybe you're in a meeting and somebody has said something irritating about your proposal, or the boss has just said something really cute and you're angry. If you will breathe 10, you're applying a stress management remedy right when you need it. The second advantage is that it's surreptitious. Nobody knows you're doing it. And you can paste on an artificial smile, but to yourself you're saying, yes, I know you think you're getting my goat, but what you don't know is, I'm breathing 10. A third suggestion by way of emergency first aid at work is to take a walk. You've just had a bad confrontation with somebody. Maybe there's been a phone call. Some jerk has said something he shouldn't have. Hang up the phone and just walk away from the situation. Take 2 minutes, take 5 minutes. If you need an excuse, say to the secretary or to a fellow worker, hey, I'm going out of the supply room, can I get you something? you know, make a few brownie points while you're at it. The point is that what you're doing is leaving an area that has all of the situational cues, all of the associated messages that go with that stress experience. That office or workstation of yours is a stress environment. It's a hot stove situation. So walk away from it. And what you're doing is activating a flight response. And as you do so, let me suggest that you add a self-reinforcing message. Say to yourself as you leave the environment, I choose now to leave these turkeys. You know, it's really hard to soar with the wings of an eagle when you're surrounded by turkeys. And what you're doing in this little message to yourself is you're saying, I am in charge. I'm not leaving because I'm being driven out. I'm not leaving because I can't hack it. I'm leaving because I choose now to leave. And take that minute to do so. Or take your break early. Do some other thing, but get out of there. Because right at that moment, when you're angry, you're liable to say something that's going to hurt you politically. You're liable to do something you're going to be ashamed of. You're going to let other people see you at a time that you don't want to be seen. From a political standpoint, from a protection of relationships standpoint, this is also a good idea. Now, when you get ready to come back, assuming this walk is not a permanent walk, then what you should do is again program a reinforcing message and say to yourself as you return to the unit, I choose now to return. And what you're going to do in that moment is to picture again that you are in charge and that now you are coming back ready to fight in a constructive way. You're now going to take on the problem or deal with its residue. And it creates in your mind's eye a positive image of somebody who is so cool they can walk away from the garbage. And somebody who is so courageous and strong that he or she can return with a sense of mastery and a sense of being the leader in this situation, rather than simply the reactor to it. A fourth quick and immediate thing that can be done is to think of that person that you least want to see when you go to work tomorrow and go see that person. Typically, problem relationships get so soured that we kind of avoid each other, and it's all about some dumb thing that happened in the past, something that has poisoned the relationship and has hurt our interpersonal communication. And if you can do this, walk up to the other person and say, hey, Harriet, I don't know how this little tension between us got started. It's certainly not important at this late date. I'm just here to give you a message. And the message is, I'm here to help you in any way that I can, and that I and the people who work for me are going to be here to give you any assistance we can. And I'd like us to be friends. And then extend your hand. Now, what has happened here is you have just given this other person in the equation a very interesting choice. Choice number one that they can make is to respond to the outstretched hand, grab it and say, boy, what a class act. You are fabulous. I wish I'd had the maturity to be the one to initiate it. And you know, it's very often the fact that people with whom we once had a strained relationship turn out to be our best friends and best supporters. There was a time when we were at war with Germany and Japan, and now they're extremely strong allies. It happens. But somebody has to build that bridge. And when other people can react with a positive response, they are showing how open they are as they also cross the bridge to be with you. The other possible response is that they won't be able to handle this and will stand there and splutter and be flustered and stammer the words out, and they won't know what to do. They're not going to take your hand, and they're just going to get red in the face. And at that moment, you could say, just walk away and say to yourself, hey, gotcha. Because this is a person who is just unable to deal with life. But what you've done is you have dealt with it. You have mastered this situation. And the fact that they don't have the capability to do it is their problem. The theological concept of forgiveness is not that we are commanded to forgive other people because they need our forgiveness. The reason that we're commanded to forgive is because we don't need the weight of that negative set of feelings. And what you do when you go up to that person you don't want to see and give that adult message is you are dumping your load. What they choose to do with their load is now up to them. But either way, you've won, and you have lessened your load. You might also want to think of the task that you least want to do. And when you go into work tomorrow, do that task. One of the concepts that we understand from effective management is that if you will tackle the toughest job first and not delay it because it's bigger, not put it off because it's harder, what will tend to happen is that you will have a success experience on something that counts. When you get one tough project done, you will go home at night feeling like you've hit a home run. You'll feel successful. You will have reflected back to you in that work a strong message that says, you can handle tough stuff. And that means you're a pretty tough cookie. But if all you do is work at low priority tasks, and usually those are lower priority because they're easier, you'll get a lot of little junk that you'll work on all day long, but you'll go home at night feeling like a chicken with its head cut off because you've run all over the place and you've gotten really nothing done that matters. You've got nothing done that confirms to you that you are a fabulous, high-performing kind of individual. You will not have a sense of being a winner if you do that. So work by priorities. And particularly when you're overloaded, when you've got so much to do that you can't possibly do all of it, then the name of the game is to focus on one task. Do only one job, but make sure that job is the most important one. That's where the stress management benefits will come. There are a second set of prescriptions that can be offered for handling job stress that represent a longer-term strategy. That is, they may not have immediate effects, but will have an impact over time. The first of these is to institute the use of bioengineering and ergonomics in the workplace. Said more simply, what's needed is to comfort zone the workplace. It's been found that by changing the physical environment of the work setting, that people will have lower lost time and fewer occupational illnesses. As an example, it's determined that when individuals work under fluorescent lighting, they will have higher lost time records than when they work under incandescent lighting. And the lowest absenteeism rates were reported for employees working under skylights or with a plentiful supply of natural sunlight. Apparently, the further away we go from the sun's natural light spectrum, the greater will be the associated degree of light illness that is associated with absenteeism. A number of companies who had already installed fluorescent fixtures are now installing the type of fluorescent tubes that more closely approximate the sun's natural setting. You talk to employees who work in an internal office with no outside walls or outside windows and ask them what they want most in their work setting, they'll very quickly respond almost unanimously that what they want is an office setting where they can see something of the outside. There is a natural hunger that seems to exist for this contact with nature. Some psychologists have suggested that the kind of work environments that most people now work within, that is, inside of buildings, is foreign to the kind of environment in which our species evolved. In ancient times, nearly everybody was involved in agriculture or fishing or some other kind of outside activity. Now we live in these glass and steel buildings that have artificial air conditioning and climate control systems, and where the ionic balance in the air that we breathe is so foreign that if you talk to a person who does have an office with an outside window and ask him what he wants most, the thing he wants most is a window he can open so he can get some fresh air from outside. The fact is that people tend to do better in fresh air systems than they do in filtered air systems. So this area of study known as ergonomics leads us to a major strategy suggestion, and that is that we find ways to create a greater degree of comfort in the workplace and a more naturalized work environment. For example, we know that if you put employees into a room decorated in blacks or chrome wallpaper, they're going to have higher lost time than if you put them into a room painted earth tones, the browns and greens. The browns and greens tend to be a more natural, a better approximation of the outdoor environment. In other words, can we make the work environment look more like the outside, or can we internalize some features of the external environment? Some architects who have been building on this knowledge base have been doing things like going back to the old Spanish concept of architecture where there are internal gardens or patios. They provide a lot of glass and a lot of light exposure. Still, other studies suggest that when there are other life forms present in the workplace, that people will report greater satisfaction with the job, lower lost time, and higher productivity. So do such simple things as surrounding employees, whenever possible, with plants. Even artificial plants turn out to have a beneficial impact. Carrying the example even further, how about bringing in goldfish tanks? As an example of the impact of other life forms, it's been found that if you put an aquarium into a sick patient's hospital room, his physical body tissues will actually heal faster and hospital stays will be shorter. You can even get away with an abstraction of natural surroundings. In hospital studies where this has been very carefully controlled and monitored, it was found that if you run a videotape of cartoon images of goldfish swimming back and forth on the TV set with little bubble sounds, you will also get this calming effect and this influence of being closer to nature. These are very powerful kinds of principles that we're just now beginning to understand. And as you look around your own work situation, you might want to ask yourself the question, can I make this a more natural environment? Can I change the coloration? Can I change the lighting? Can I change the ventilation systems to do that? The other aspect of the word comfort is the more traditional definition. For example, are people's chairs comfortable? Is the temperature correct? Is it a cluttered place? People report that clutter is a major stressor, both at work and at home. When members of management go through a work environment and insist that the place be kept tidy, that it be kept clean, it becomes a more pleasant place in which to live. It makes a substantial difference. Even in heavy manufacturing environments where this is a very real problem, it's been found that organizations that pay attention to housekeeping details get a positive response from workforce members. Comfort zoning, then, is a powerful strategy and a strong recommendation. Another strategy is to pay attention to people's careers if you're in management, and certainly pay attention to your own. Many employees sense that they're not going anywhere in their career. As one advances in the hierarchy, there are fewer and fewer positions to which one can be promoted, and there's often an increasing competition for each of these succeeding promotions. As a consequence, many people will experience a dead-end phenomenon, a final placement syndrome. If they have been achievement-oriented all their life, to experience this situation is very stultifying and very deadening. One of the things that can be done to keep hope alive, if you will, is to provide a lot of employee education and training, management development, and the like, so that people have a sense that although they're not yet being given the kinds of responsibilities they want to someday have, management is paying attention to them and trying to do something to help prepare them. In some cases, intelligent managements offer these programs already. In other instances, individuals are left to themselves. And if that's the case with you, what you need to do is maximize your preparation. Right now, you may not have all the degrees you want. Well, go get some. Right now, there may be some courses that you would like to take, some technical skill or knowledge that you can pick up. Well, get that. There may be some job assignment management would let you try your hand at if you requested it. In the long run, those things may pay off. In the meantime, you will have a sense of being in charge, of taking some responsibility for yourself, and of not feeling this emotional loss of just watching the minute hand on the wall. So don't lose career time. A third major strategy in the workplace is that all organization living creates a situation in which we are often working with people that we would never choose as friends, people that we don't particularly care for, and then we're not even asked to like, but nonetheless have to cooperate with, have to smile at, have to at least on a surface level give some degree of cooperation. In that kind of human environment, where you cannot flee from them, but must continually interact with them, it's important that you learn the skills of assertiveness and that you learn to take responsibility for clarifying exactly what is expected of you. Be sure that you get people to specify exactly what it is you need to know. Tell them it's unclear. Say, "I won't take action until I understand this better." It's your right, along with many other rights that you have, to ask exactly what it takes to get ahead around here. What does it take to get a promotion? What does it take to get a salary increase? A person who is acting toward his employer and toward other people in that way is basically acting like an adult and has decided, "I'm not simply going to wait around till the magic sword falls upon me and grants me all these goodies. I'm instead going to find out exactly what has to be done in order to satisfy the system, and I'll take some responsibility for then making it happen." Obviously, there can come a time for some when we'll have to decide whether to stay with a particular organization. It's really not fair to stay on an employer's payroll and continually carp and be critical and be negative about what they have failed to do. The fact is that no organization, even the best managed organizations in the world, cannot satisfy the needs that complex human beings have. And so it's really just a question of what level of compromise you are willing to make between what they can do for you and what they can't. And if it gets to the point that the organization can't or won't follow through with enough of what you want, don't be super critical of them. Instead, start making the positive career moves that will get you out of that employer's area and into another situation where you can make a contribution and receive your just rewards. If you understand and are willing to accept that, then you won't have the stressed feeling of being unappreciated. You won't have the anxiety of wondering, "Where have I failed? What have I done wrong?" So instead, look at the situation objectively, dispassionately, and realize that sometimes the best way to handle the career stresses that are associated with any job is to leave that job. The statistics are that professionals, people who have completed some technical or college course of training required to work in their job, will have on average about 7.8 employers during their professional career lifetime. I've worked for 3 employers since graduation, so I'm really only about halfway through my expected career transitions. We no longer think of the job as being something that we're going to be wedded to as though it were a marriage. In my father's generation, the average was less than 2 jobs to be held during the course of a career lifetime. There are many things that you can do. Don't get hung up in the feeling that all you can do is the job that you do now. There are lots of things that you could do. The fourth major recommendation in the area of what an individual can do to personally control the stresses on the job is to get into time management with a vengeance. We've alluded elsewhere in this program to a couple of the major principles. Get hold of a time management book, go to a time management seminar. Nearly all of the studies indicate that people at work experience deadlines as one of their major pressures. Too much to do and too little time. It's the relationship between what you gotta do and when it's gotta be done. So by definition, almost anything you do that better manages and controls your time turns out to be a stress management remedy. Let me say that again. Anything that you do to help you handle time pressure will in fact be an improvement in your overall stress handling menu.